So, you know, guys, it's really difficult to give a presentation after such, you know, brilliant and fascinating presentation. And of course, my research is not so modern and so well funded. It's mostly basic blood neurology. And to tell the truth, I never got any funding for what I'm going to tell you about. And that's why my laboratory has to work on many other projects, such as development of artificial heart or artificial blood, or working on development of new technologies for a treatment of hyperperfusion. But today I'm not going to talk about this. I wouldn't take it, of course. I'm going to talk about blood neurology. First, I want to show you one slide which I actually built last night when I came to the hotel, and I came to this idea looking at the window of my plane for four and a half hours, and looking from all fractals which you can see everywhere. So, and I just collected put together different phenomena. And I just came to the kind of, you know, thought that this design is the favorite design of the creator or nature, whatever you want to put. And you would wonder, you certainly recognize this as kidney blood circulation, and this you recognize also, it's very similar, has very similar structure to this, but this is the tree. And this is lightning, but what is this one? Looks like a renal artery or something like this. No, it's a Delta Mississippi. And this one is Rocky Mountains. And you see all this branching structure are very similar, and something is behind this. I really don't know what exactly. But I'm not going to talk about cardiovascular system. I'm pretty sure it's very well optimized, but since it's not just cardiovascular system, it's a system where some fluid is flowing. And I'm going to talk about this fluid and to see how nature optimized it or did not optimize it. So we're going to talk about blood. And just to remind or tell people who are not very familiar with blood, first of all, blood is very special organ in our body. First of all, it's liquid. It's huge and it's liquid. But what is interesting, during our lifespan, we can share this organ with other people many times without any harm to ourselves. And as I hope you will see from my presentation, it can be even beneficial for you. Mm-hmm. So blood consists of a cell. It's a suspension of cells. And so cells include red blood cells. This is about 50% of blood volume. And the function, major function of red blood cells, to transport gases. Leukocytes, white blood cells, which are bodyguards, or which provide surveillance, walking around, moving in vessels and moving into tissue, and attacking some foreign bodies and other stuff which our body doesn't need to have it. Thrombocytes, platelets, which maintain our system stable, maintain integrity in our system, preventing bleeding and fixing holes in some vessels, etc. And all the cells are suspended in blood plasma, which is the major transport meaning in our vascular system, because they provide delivery of nutrients and everything, and they provide garbage removal, because the waste that needs to be removed. going to talk about mechanical properties of blood. Of course, talking about blood cells would be very, very interesting about their functions and everything. But I'm going to talk about mechanical properties of blood as a fluid. And the major mechanical parameter, you can say even only mechanical parameter of this fluid is viscosity. And viscosity of blood, I think some of you know that blood is a non-Newtonian fluid, is all suspension of deformable particles. And viscosity, what does it mean? It means that viscosity of blood depends on shear rate. So as I always tell my students, please remember, when you say viscosity of blood, remember that viscosity of blood is not a number, it's a curve, because viscosity of blood depends on shear rate. It's high at low shear rates or at low flow conditions, and it's getting low at high shear rates, and at some point it reaches some asymptotic value, which usually people call blood viscosity when they calculate something in artificial system with blood flow. Viscosity of blood at full shear rates depends on concentration of red blood cells, on plasma viscosity, of course, and two major parameters related to mechanical properties of red blood cells define blood viscosity at low and high shear rates. It's the red blood cell deformability, ability of red blood cells to deform, and the red blood cell aggregation, ability of red blood cells, especially in human blood, to build aggregates. I will show you a little bit later pictures of that. And this is my collection of blood sample, viscosity of blood from various animals and human and various animals. And you can see that viscosity dependence on shear rate is very different. For example, this one is sheep ovine blood. And it's almost Newtonian if you consider the difference between low shear viscosity and high shear viscosity. And this is viscosity of horse blood. And it's very, very, it has very strong non-Newtonian behavior. And the major reason for this is very strong aggregation of red blood cells. So if you work with horse blood or antelope blood, which is next one, or cat blood, you left sample for a few seconds, if red blood cells start to settle right away, very, very fast, because they start to clump together, aggregate, and big aggregates start to see. So you can see it right away. So, and this is the human blood, and the sample was treated in my laboratory, and you can see this, the hematocrit of this blood was 40%, and this is low shear viscosity, which is about 60 centipoise, and the high shear viscosity, asymptotic viscosity, is about 4 or 5 centipoise. Of course, viscosity depends on temperature. We also have to remember this. And what is interesting, if you harden red blood cells, eliminate their deformability, this suspension of these hardened cells in the same plasma, suspended in the same plasma, becomes Newtonian. Newtonian fluid with much, much higher viscosity, but it's Newtonian. And so again, I showed here that low shear viscosity is related to aggregation of red blood cells. And this low viscosity of blood at high shear rates related to ability of red blood cells to deform. And by doing this, they're getting oriented flow path. So the ability of red blood cells to deform form is really remarkable. You see this red blood cell folding going through the small pore. It's an 8-micron human red blood cell, and it goes through a pore with size 5-micron. We always have to keep in mind that our capillaries have a size from 3 to probably 10 maximum micron. And red blood cells, human red blood cells, have size 8-micron, so they would not even be able to even enter into capillaries. They would not be deformable. And this is another folding red blood cell going through the filter. And it's extremely important for red blood cells. We actually have in our spleen, we have a built-in rheometer where all red blood cells certain period of time going through tiny slits with 1-micron size. So cells which are not able to pass this slit are getting destroyed because they are not good enough. And it's happened to all red blood cells. Human red blood cells have a lifespan of 120 days. So we always have in our body young red blood cells, middle-aged red blood cells, and old red blood cells. And all red blood cells are becoming more rigid, less, more dense and more rigid. And due to this, they are getting destroyed by reticular endothelial system, and materials are getting recycled, of course. So I want to show to you a small video clip which we obtained in my laboratory. It's a mesentery of red. And we fluorescently labeled some of red blood cells and injected them back into, infused them back into red. And then we observed what, how they go through small capillaries. At some point you will see slow flow, you will see the actual size of this red blood cells. Okay, so maybe if I will have time, I will come. Okay, so now about the red blood cell aggregation. With deformability, it's quite clear. If deformability of red blood cells is impaired, they are not easily go through capillaries. And it means that the people with low deformability of red blood cells or reduced deformability of red blood cells have much less density of functioning capillaries because they just don't go there. And the capillaries become plasmatic and red blood cells do not perform their function. With aggregation of red blood cells, it's a little bit more difficult to define the meaning of this aggregation, the process of aggregation of red blood cells in vascular system, because what we see here, it's a slide. You put a drop of blood on a slide, microscopic slide, and look, as soon as flow stops, they build this aggregate. But blood is flowing all the time, so there's not too much room for this phenomena. But it certainly has some physiological meaning, and I will talk about this a little bit later. This is again a microscopic slide, and you can see this beautiful structure which red blood cells build. It's human, by the way, on the red blood cell, because many mammals don't have aggregation of red blood cells, such as cow, sheep, goat. It's also an interesting question why some mammals have aggregation of red blood cells and other don't. And this is the dangerous, really dangerous thing. This is blood of cardiac patients. Actually, this patient was a candidate for artificial heart implantation, so it was very bad stage of cardiovascular, I think it was cardiomyopathy. And you can see how clumpy became red blood cells. They build aggregates which are very, very difficult to destroy. If even you increase shear shear stress and apply much higher shear rate, they are very resistant and they can flow like pieces of this aggregates. So looks almost like agglutination. And this is the list of pathologies at which patients have increased or very high aggregation. And you can see here cardiovascular diseases, diabetes. By the way, people with diabetes have, at the same time, have reduced deformability of red blood cells, which is certainly related to all this microangiopathies and development and poor microcirculation. Obesity, hypertension, atherosclerosis, and shock of any nature, hypovolemic or toxic shock, always aggregation of red blood cells going up. And aggregation of red blood cells is mostly due to bridging of red blood cells with fibrinogen molecules. So fibrinogen is a protein which is responsible for clotting of blood, converting into fibrin, and we always have a lot of molecules of fibrinogen. I recently asked one of my students to count how many molecules of fibrinogen we have per one red blood cell, and I was surprised because it was something like 10 million of molecules, 10 to the 7th molecules. So it's enough to bridge them, but it's not.
Okay, good question. So the time scale of most of those items there could be like a long time scale of years or something. Shock, at least what I'm envisioning, is something that's going to happen over a short period of time.
Right.
How is there such a fast response to change this ability to aggregate on that time scale? Is it still something to do with the fibrinogen or is something deactivating?
No, there are some immune globulins. There are some other big molecules in plasma, especially released when conditions, acute conditions like shock,
okay.
Example, toxic shock.
So they're interfering with the action of the fibrinogen, or how come they're disrupting, how come they're increasing the?
Oh, they just work together.
They add to the fibrinogen effect. Okay,
yeah,
I see.
So they
you list here the diseases, so negative side aspects of this aggregation. Does exist some positive sides? Why do exist?
That's what I said before. It's difficult to understand what is the physiological role of aggregation of red blood cells, especially since we have examples of any mammals which don't have aggregation, so they live with it. Deformability is not necessary because camel has rigid red blood cells. They're ellipsoidal, and so they still can go into capillaries, but they have to be oriented very well. But they're rigid. And of course, animals with nucleus in red blood cells, have, like frogs or other this type of animals, their red blood cells are much, much less deformable than red blood cells of mammals. So, okay, and there are some methods. I just wanted to very briefly to list methods of measurement of blood viscosity, and via blood viscosity we can estimate, evaluate ability of red blood cells to aggregate and deformability of red blood cells. And these are rotational viscometers which can provide you with very wide range of shear rates and give you some idea about low shear viscosity, high shear viscosity. And capillary viscometer, which is a fluid capillary which applies actually Poiseuille law, and of course it cannot give you a range of shear rates, and it's mostly used for Newtonian fluids. But if you want to know what is asymptotic value of your blood viscosity, you can use capillary viscometer if you know you can carefully cherry. And another method of evaluation of aggregation of red blood cells, it's a very old clinical method, actually, measurement of sedimentation rate, erythrocyte sedimentation rate. And it was very popular when I was young, and this is the sample. So they place blood in a tube and measure how fast the red blood cells go down per hour. They practically stopped using this method because, first of all, it's not specific. It doesn't tell you what happened. Okay, they settle very fast, and we don't know why. And another, I think the major reason is this parameter is very sensitive to concentration of red blood cells. And if concentration is low, hematocrit is low, they fall down very, very fast. If it's high, they stay and they give you a wrong impression about aggregation of red blood cells. And this is an ectocytometry example of measurement of deformability of red blood cells in coiled flow and measurement of deformation of red blood cells when you apply certain shear stress to them. One more picture which compares the serological behavior of non-Newtonian fluid, human blood, and two Newtonian fluids, polyfoil, which is very viscous, I mean, not extremely viscous. If you look at the viscosity of honey, it will be 10,000 of centipoise, and milk, and you can see the difference very clearly. So now I get to my subject, which I was going to talk about. Many years ago, probably 30 years ago, I found some interesting and quite sad statistics back to my work at Moscow State University in former Soviet Union. I found this formal statistics, if we can believe Soviet statistics, so the mortality of males from cardiovascular diseases is much higher than mortality of females. And while mortality of, this is a graph which shows the ratio of mortality of males to mortality of females. And this ratio related to cancer is almost close to one, so it's almost equal. But this is really interesting statistic, if we can use this word, because at age from 30 to 50, 60, it's five times up to almost eight times higher mortality in males than mortality in females. And at that time, I started to work with blood rheology, and my first hypothesis was that maybe when I measured viscosity of blood samples from males and females, it's you see immediately that male blood has much higher concentration of red blood cells, much higher hematocrit. So the formal official hypothesis at that time was the reason for this difference in mortality was the high level of the circulating ovarian hormones that produce vasodilatory effect protect females in reproductive age. But at that time, or a little bit later, there was a publication of the huge Framingham studies of many hundred thousand of people, and they found that females with surgically induced menopause had the same increased risk of cardiovascular disease, which if the ovaries were removed or not. So that, in females with surgical menopause and still having this estrogens, the risk of cardiovascular diseases increased. So my hypothesis started this at the time was the premenopausal females due to monthly blood loss, and everybody knows that due to menstruation, females lose about 50-100 milliliters of blood every month. They have much lower concentration of red blood cells because red blood cells are not recovered very fast. Proteins can recover within a few days. Platelets can recover in 2-3 days. But red blood cells, it takes time before red blood cells will return to the blood. So, and you can see if you work with blood samples of females and males, you can see that hematocrit is always lower in female blood. And at that time, I performed some kind of, I didn't measure hematocrit, it was a kind of epidemiological study of students of Moscow State University. I just looked through, I got an access to their medical records, and I looked at hematocrit and blood pressure, two parameters. And all of them were very young, so freshmen, 17, 18 years old. And I had almost equal number of females and males, and you can see that hematocrit concentration of red blood cells in blood of boys was statistically significantly higher. And blood pressure was statistically significantly higher in boys than in girls. So this was, hematocrit was almost 45, and in girls it was 39.5. And blood pressure, systolic blood pressure in girls was 110, while in boys it was 120. Healthy young people. But between this students, I found 53 boys with blood pressure much higher than normal, over 140, over 85. And within girls, there were just four of them, so 13 times bigger. And 53 boys with increased blood pressure had a concentration of red blood cells above 50, which is certainly abnormal. So at that time, I thought probably there is something with this concentration of red blood cells, because obviously, the viscosity of their blood is higher than normal. And this is the comparison. The same blood, the hematocrit adjusted, original hematocrit was 48%, adjusted to 40. And you can see that this 20% of difference in hematocrit gives you 90% in low viscosity and 40% in asymptotic viscosity. So, viscosity and hematocrit. But later, I continued to learn, because I did tell you that my PhD was not related to blood rheology or physiology. It was pure mechanical engineering about mathematical modeling of drilling of petroleum wells. So, but I was very interested in applying my education to blood flow. And at some point I found out this amazing phenomena, which everyone in this room has this phenomena in blood vessels. And the phenomena is, in blood vessels with size below 500 micron, especially below 300 micron, there is a very well-developed cell-free layer near wall. And when you look at this, the hematocrit is not so important in this situation, because here we have viscosity of plasma, so the resistance of this vessel is defined by viscosity of plasma, not by hematocrit. And another consequence of this phenomena is we have a concentration of red blood cells in our capillaries, about 50% of systemic concentration, because of so-called plasma skimming, when at each branch more plasma going into vessel branch than red blood cells, and as a result, the concentration of red blood cells is getting smaller and smaller. So this phenomena kind of disproved that original hypothesis that the difference in this mortality or morbidity of males due to cardiovascular diseases was only due to high viscosity, due to high hematocrit. And as we can see on this picture, that most of resistive arteries are in the range of this sizes of vessels with small diameter where this thyroid phenomena exists. So only large vessels don't have it, but there's no resistance. They're pretty wide, and the resistance is very low. Now, when I arrived to this country about 20 years ago, and at some time I decided to take a look at the American statistics, and I found the same picture. So and you can see that mortality of males on myocardial infarction and ischemic heart disease is much, much higher than mortality of females, and it happened with about the same range of ages. So I started to think about some difference between blood constituents in female, premenopausal female and male. And I found one Italian paper where the distribution of red blood cells by age was determinant. And they found that males had much less number of much fewer young red blood cells. As I mentioned before, that we always have in our blood young red blood cells, middle-aged red blood cells, old red blood cells. It's a 120 days lifespan of red blood cells. So in males, they found a much fewer number of young red blood cells and a much higher number of old red blood cells than in females. And this phenomenon is certainly related to blood loss, this monthly blood loss, because when you lose blood, you lose red blood cells of all ages, but you get back from your bone marrow on the young red blood cells. So that's why females, premenopausal females, have a much larger number of young red blood cells. So after that, I decided to see what is the difference between mechanical properties of young red blood cells and old red blood cells. It's quite easy to get them. You can separate blood, you can spin it down, remove plasma, and then spin again concentrated red blood cells. You remove buffy coat, of course, white blood cells and platelets are removed. And if you spin it long enough, you get due to density gradient, you get young red blood cells on the top of your tube and old red blood cells on the bottom. So you collect young red blood cells and you discard middle and you collect old red blood cells. And this is the results of my measurements of mechanical properties of old and young red blood cells. And you can see that deformability of red blood cells, everything was statistically significant. Deformability of old red blood cells was lower than young red blood cells. Sedimentation rate was much higher, so which tells us that aggregation of these old red blood cells was much higher, much stronger. Low shear viscosity was much higher, and mechanical fragility also found that the mechanical fragility was higher. So after that, I decided to check. And as I said at the very beginning, this study never was funded by anything. So I just did it because I wanted to have an answer. So it was kind of a hobby. So I started blood samples obtained from people around my laboratory. They were mostly young people, graduate students, and I had 47 females and 50 males. And what I found that hematocrit obviously was higher in male blood. Deformability of red blood cells was statistically significantly lower. Aggregation was higher, and sedimentation rate was higher. So it's actually consistent with this difference between young and old red blood cells. And it's quite clear that this result could be expected. Then I calculated oxygen delivery index, which was introduced a long time ago by Dr. Xu Qian, which is very simple. Hematocrit, concentration of red blood cells, it's representing amount of oxygen which blood carries, and divided by whole blood viscosity, which kind of, you know, the parameter which provides resistance, proportional to resistance of the flow. And as you can see, that oxygen delivery index was much lower in male blood compared to female blood. And if you prepare of the same blood sample, prepare samples with different hematocrit, so plasma viscosity is the same, just hematocrit is different, and calculate oxygen delivery index based on your values of viscosity of this samples, you can see that there is some plateau on this oxygen delivery index. And this is something related to optimization, because it's quite clear that this values of hematocrit are optimal because they provide the maximum of oxygen delivery. And it happened that this and it corresponds to normal hematocrit of premenopausal females. So, and males, hematocrits are right here, so oxygen delivery index getting lower. And this is the summary of all my studies. Viscosity, females are green, males are red. So viscosity and oxygen delivery index versus hematocrit, and you can see how unhappy should be males, because viscosity is high and oxygen delivery is lower than in females. And this graph shows comparison of the same oxygen delivery index in females, males, and oxygen delivery index calculated using blood of cardiac patients. And these cardiac patients had hematocrit much lower than even premenopausal females, but still due to extremely high viscosity of their plasma and low deformability, they had oxygen delivery index very low. A summary related to this comparative study, I'm not done yet. So male blood obviously has higher viscosity due to higher hematocrit and red blood cell aggregation and lower red blood cell deformability. And men possess higher number of old red blood cells and fewer number of young red blood cells than females of reproductive age. And oxygen delivery index is also lower in male blood. And increased viscosity and red blood cell aggregability and decreased deformability of red blood cells were many years discussed as factors, risk factors of cardiovascular diseases. And therefore, this difference in mechanical properties of female, premenopausal female blood and male can be placed males at much higher risk of cardiovascular diseases than premenopausal women. And And so quite obvious conclusion from this that if you donate blood, you can improve situation. You can reduce number of red blood cells. You can bring more young red blood cells into your vascular system, and you can reduce the risk of cardiovascular diseases. And
does this come into blood banks policy? For example, you don't want blood from men.
No. The blood banks, it's interesting. The blood banks, I presented it one time in Pittsburgh to someone related to blood banks, and they were very excited, and they tried to introduce this information to blood banks, because, you know, blood banks always have deficit in blood donors, especially during winter time. And if people know that they can help themselves donating blood, they would more likely to come to blood bank. And blood bank didn't want to advertise this because they consider that it should be completely altruistic.
Yes.
So blood donation should be completely altruistic. I don't think it's right,
yeah.
But still it's their policy. And my guess is they're much more afraid that people will start to hide their diseases, and you know, just to get.
But they will not distinguish between male and female blood in their bank.
No, they do not. And you know, most of blood is getting separated regularly, so they get factored blood cells, frozen plasma, and they.
And blood types.
Yeah, it depends.
But not male or female, I will not.
Usually you. Oh no, it's not even written on the back of.
Excuse me, another question. During the blood is preserved in these blood banks, do the younger blood cells become older or not?
Oh, sure, they continue to metabolize.
So it means when they use this blood, it's essentially all blood cells.
Well, it depends how fast they use it.
Also, right?
Recently, there were several papers published about the aging of blood and blood banks, and even in a proceeding of Academy of Science, there was a paper that the quality of blood stored in a blood bank over 2 weeks is getting very, very bad. So people sometimes get myocardial infarction or stroke after transfusion of blood bank blood. So now I want to talk a little bit more, if I have time, a few minutes, about aggregation of red blood cells. So I still try to understand what is the meaning of aggregation of red blood cells, and what I think that back to this Fareham's phenomena. It's very well known that if red blood cells aggregate, they are much faster move toward the center and leave much larger cell-free layer near wall. And it means that wall shear stress is getting lower. This means that wall shear stress is responsible for release of nitric oxide, this powerful vasodilator. If wall shear stress is lower, and this is all going on through mechanotransduction of shear stress into endothelial cells. So if shear stress is lower, so the cells, the vessels constrict because there's not enough nitric oxide. So if we eliminate aggregation by somehow, the cell-free layer will be much smaller, and it's certainly not like water, like a stone. Some cells are getting to the wall, and they even transport gases through. Right now it's pretty accepted that about 50% of gas transport occurs not in capillaries, but in small vessels, like small arteries and arterioles. So even with this cell-free layer, it's still going on. Now, how can we help ourselves and reduce aggregation of red blood cells? And there is an answer to this. If we exercise, we increase blood flow, And as you, if you remember, at high shear rates, aggregates red blood cell disaggregate. So if we exercise, we can reduce the cell-free layer near wall, right here. We can get more red blood cells into capillaries, so the gas transport will be improved, and we will fill much more capillaries with red blood cells, because due to increase in wall shear stress, the vessels will dilate, and we will have less energy lost from a large arteries to precapillary area, and this higher precapillary pressure will be able to push more red blood cells through capillaries. So, as I recently found this amazing word, diseases are prevented as blood flow is promoted. Mm. Isn't it something?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there are guys from China, they probably know about who lived in almost 2,000 years ago, and he promoted exercises. And, so thank you.